quite the case. Right? How many steps is the agent supposed to live? And today we'll see that actually that's one of the more interesting distinctions in the different MDP frameworks. You can have a finite horizon Markov decision process, which assumes that the agent will live only in the real world, the agent will live only for k time steps. Okay. Now, if you're only going to live for k time steps, you only need to know what to do in each of those time steps. Okay, that's the finite horizon Markov decision process. Okay, and then there is the infinite horizon Markov decision process, which says the agent can live infinitely long. Okay, even before we go into all the formal frameworks, you can already start seeing that even if you get a little reward per state, if k equal to infinity, that means you have infinite number of rewards and you add them up, you'll get an infinity. And so there is no mathematically this notion of talking about optimal policy completely breaks down. Right? And so we wind up talking about discounting the future reward with respect to the present. So that, I mean, you can think of it either in terms of how to make an infinite sequence sum to a finite number. Okay? Or you can also, having done this, you can try to give some psychological validity to it and say, indeed, most people tend to attach less. I mean, so if I were to tell you that I can give you $10,000 10 years from now or $1,000 today, you don't necessarily say 10,000 is bigger than 1,000. Okay? That's because you assume that the future rewards are hugely discounted with respect to the present. How much you discount depends on how pessimistic you are about hanging around here for 10 years. Right? Okay? So that's a different model. So there's a finite horizon, there's an infinite horizon, and then there is the indefinite horizon, which is you guys. Okay? I mean, on one hand, I think it's been established that unless police shoot you, apparently they shot a 107-year-old guy over the weekend, unless police shoot you, you can live as long as 107 years old. Right? But most of you don't make it to all the 107 years. So you have somewhere between now and 107 years is your length of life. Okay? So you have indefinite horizon. So the question is, how do you talk about optimal policies in that case? So keep this in the back of your head. That winds up becoming an important thing. And that's where actually the part T comes in. T is the horizon. Okay? So and then of these, basically, you have finite number of states. Okay? And you have a finite action set, that means the set of actions that you can take in any given state. And then you have a transition function. The transition function essentially is saying that if you were to do action A in S, you will get to S dash with the probability. What is the probability that you get to S dash? That's what the transition function will tell you. If it's a deterministic transition function, these probabilities will be ones and zeros. If it is a stochastic transition function, the probability will be a number, a real number between 0 and 1, such that all the probabilities add up to 1. Okay? So that's basically what we have in mind in terms of the transition function. Okay? So that's your Markov decision process. So this was a picture that we had last time. It was an example of an MDP. And in this MDP, you have states. These states were essentially 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4, etc. Those are the states. Okay? And the actions are going up, going down, going left, going right. And the transition function is essentially provided because if I were in this state and then I do a go up action, I know that I will be in the 2, 1 state with 0.8 probability and basically 1-2 state with 0.1 probability and will remain in 1-1 state with 0.1 probability. Okay, right? So those are the states, and then now one other thing that we have to talk about is the reward function. So there is a bounded reward function. We'll assume it's a real valued reward function. Okay? And it's basically for each state, just because you are in the state, you get a door prize. That's the reward. Okay? And then, so you get immediate reward just to get into the state. As soon as you get into the state, you get that reward. And if you get into the state again, that means if you are in that state, when the time ticks again to the next time epoch, you'll get the reward again. The reward can be positive, in which case you get two positives, you get negative, you'll get two negatives. Okay? What? That's basically not making a move is doing an action. So again, this is actually very important for intelligent agent to understand. You know, I mean, I think people have said this in various proverbs. That is, inaction is an action. Okay, not doing it is a deliberate, you chose deliberately not to do anything. Okay, so if you did not do anything, in fact, in that particular case, if you allow, so in this framework, by the way, an agent has to do an action because the four actions it has were up, down, left, right. If you want to allow your agent the conscientious objector's, you know, status, then you need to throw it one more action, no up. You have to throw that in. Okay? If you throw in the no up action, then essentially the agent can decide to pick that action, in which case it will stay in the same. That if you set, there is not, again, one of the biggest issues is which parts of this MDP are set by the agent, which parts are set by people outside the agent. Okay, if I were silly enough to set an MDP where there is a very happy state and you have no penalty for not leaving it, like for example, I mean those of you who have really, really nice parents, who let you stay in their homes forever and keep taking care of your bed sheets and everything all the time and give you food, etc. If the parents were to do that and you are not doing anything, not going anywhere, don't yell at the kid. I mean, you shouldn't be called a kid, you're adult, but don't yell at the adult either. They're doing the rationally correct thing to do, which is the world out there is kind of unhappy. And I'm being taken care of here, you know, these guys are taking care of me. That's the right thing to do for me to hang around there. If your reward function is that way, then that would be the rational thing to do. Okay, but of course you can just choose to define the reward function. You know, that's the other thing that intelligent agents do. You know, I mean, I might say that if you don't leave, I'll start hitting you, and then you can say, hits are good, so I feel good when people hit me. Then God knows what I can do, right? I mean, you change the reward function. I mean, I think it's bad for you, but you think it's good for you. Then you know, all bets are off. Okay. So anyway, but you know, so in this particular case, you have the rewards, you have the states, and you have the transition function, okay? And then there are, within this simple model, starting from this simple model, you can do all sorts of little changes to come up with slightly different types of MDP models, okay? For example, one, you know, in this case, actions do not have any cost. There's nothing to talk about action having a cost. States have rewards, but actions don't have cost. So would I say that actions, how do I bring in actions having cost? One idea is you can generalize the reward function to be a two argument function. If the reward function is a function of the state and the action that you took to get into that state. Okay? And then basically that way you will be able to talk about the cost of the action. Okay, and then one other thing is you could also say that the reward function, you know, currently reward function is deterministic. As soon as you get into that state, you get exactly that reward, nothing more, nothing less. You can also make the reward function stochastic. Okay, there is a probability distribution with respect to which you will get this reward. Okay, that doesn't change much of what we are talking about. Although we will assume that the reward functions are deterministic most of the time, really it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you have what? Oh yeah, thank you. Assuming, oh, my thing is dead. Okay. Oh, that's not good at all. This could be a shortest class. Yeah, so I think there is a loose contact somewhere and it just...
died.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then we will have to go to the plan B. That's not going to work, so I'm going to use this. Okay, one thing we could talk about as this is coming up, is look at the transition model of the MDP. Okay. So you essentially are in some state, let's say S0, and from S0 you get into some other state, S1. How do you get into that state S1? The specific state you get into depends on the action you chose to do in state S0. Okay, and then when you get to S1, you get a reward. R1. So this is sort of the graphical model of the Markov addition process. Okay, so this continues. Okay, so an MDP is a transition model. A transition model where if I, for example, cut off this and cut off this, if I just show you a bunch of states which are connected probabilistically to each other, that most of you or some of you should see it as a Markov chain. Right? Okay. MDPs are Markov chains, but you have free will is allowed. You have a choice in the way the Markov chain will evolve. You, the agent, can decide to change the way the chain will evolve by picking different action inputs. Okay. In the case of, why am I getting this? What? SUAD is supposed to work too, but
there was a space at the top.
Oh. It should work actually. Okay. Anyway, it should come now. So what you have in the MDPs is these action inputs. In Markov chains, the problems you typically solve are given a chain, can you find the steady state probability distribution over the state? Okay, that's the only thing. In case of Markov chain, if somebody gives you a Markov chain, all you can do is observe it. There is no input that you can provide. In the MDP is a Markov chain where you have a whole bunch of inputs you can provide which change the way the chain actually transitions. Right. In fact, your transition function for Markov chains, Markov decision process was this, right? TSAS' is a probability that you will get S dash given S A. Right? That's the transition function. And if I just remove the A, then I will get the transition function S dash. Is probability you will be in S dash given that you were in S. That's Markov chain. Right? Okay. So there was a time, there was once a conference talk I attended in the IIII. You may actually wind up, we might have a chance to read that paper at some point of time. And this is the best paper, award-winning paper in the conference. And then this guy comes to give the talk. He's a student. He comes to give the talk, realizes that the projector doesn't work. Everybody and their brother is in the room. You know, even though there are parallel sessions, everybody wants to hear this because it's the conference's best paper. The projector is totally out of whack because somebody before him must have used a Linux machine with the projector, and you know what happens after that. And then the interesting thing is, of course, you know, that what you would expect is, you know, like a student author, you know, that they just go crazy. This guy just sat there, methodically did like a 15-step repair, and then got the projector working. So many of us thought he should be given the Outstanding Paper Award just for keeping cool under that position. You know, forget about who did what, you what work you did. At least you kept your cool. But anyway, so okay. So and then the reward functions have to be bounded. So this is what I was showing you. So this is your transition function of your MDP. Okay, and then. The interesting questions, of course, is you can generalize it into continuous state Markovization processes. That's a huge generalization. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about mostly finite state Markovization processes. One of the sad parts of life is that while we will avoid dealing with continuous states, in fact, one of the interesting things is AI as a discipline wound up intersecting with lots and lots of other disciplines, as you probably know by now. I mean, there's the statistics, there is OR, there is signal processing, there is robotics, and so on. And in different ways, essentially, you know, a discipline is to some extent, you know, decided by what problems you wish away from the real world and what problems you focus on. Okay, there is no control theory person who wishes away continuous variables. Okay, but AI people get away for a long time without touching the continuous variables. Okay, it's basically, they'll give up something else. So for example, control theory people don't try to come up with plans. They'll mostly talk about controlling the state. Okay, so one of the things that we tend to avoid in the beginning is always go with the discrete state representation. That's not because continuous state representations are not important. It is that while we are focusing on the other big things, we'll keep this discrete state. And we'll keep telling ourselves this until we reach PAMDPs, where we will say, even in the case of PAMDPs, we'll only consider discrete states. And then, lo and behold, find that the way to see a PAMDP with discrete states is as an MDP in continuous state. Okay? Because a PAMDP becomes an MDP in what's called a belief state representation. And belief states are probability distributions over the states. And probability distributions are continuous. Okay? And so essentially we will eventually touch continuous MDPs when we talk about PAMDPs. And you'll see that they become quite hairy. Okay, but that's at least several weeks from now. Okay, so we'll go on with the finite MDPs. Okay. So then what else? Okay, so here are some of the properties of this representation, this particular model we are talking about. One is it's Markovian, especially first order Markovian. The reason it's first order Markovian is because the transition function depends only on the current state, not on how you got to the current state. Okay, it's important to keep this in mind because while we, when in a minute when we start developing an algorithm for like finite state, finite horizon MDPs, you need to ask yourself what part of that algorithm depended on the Markovness property. Okay, first order Markov is typically assumed, is also shortened as Markov. Okay, and Markov means the next state depends only on the current state, not how you got to the current state. So it's history independent. Okay, a second order Markov only says that the next state depends on the last two states you are in. A third order Markov next state depends on the last three states you are in. Okay, and one of the interesting things, again, because I'm kind of, you know, jumping, I did talk about PalmDPs a little. When we get to PalmDPs, we'll see that PalmDPs, when seen from the partial observability point of view, they are not Markov. Okay, when you do not, this is actually a very interesting point to, you know, give some thought to. Basically, what happened in this state might change. You may decide based on all the observations you got up until this, you know, this time period, you might not only revise exactly where you are, but also revise where you have been. That's the beauty of partial observability. Okay, not only do you estimate where you are, but you revise the estimate of where you were. How many of you follow economics of the country? And don't you see that every once in a while they say, Fed basically said 158,000 jobs were created. Yay, everybody is happy. And then 3 months later they'll say, Fed revised its estimate as to how many jobs were created to 120,000. How did they decide to change what happened in the past? Because they got more information. It was always a partially observable scenario. You know, you don't exactly know how many jobs are created unless people actually, you know, report these things. Okay, based on the reports they had, they came up with an estimate. And then 3 months later, some of the laggards came in and then they wind up revising the estimate. That's what happens when you have partial observability. That also means that you are no longer Markov. Okay, so when you convert PalmDP into MDP, it will become a Markov decision process. So PalmDP, this is like a technical point, PalmDP is not a Markov decision process. Even though it has the M in it, it's history dependent. But when you convert it into MDP, which becomes a continuous state MDP, and it will be Markov. Okay, anyway, so this is first order Markov here, and that's the definition, that probability that you will be in state T plus 1, I mean, in a state, a particular state in the T plus 1, given that you did action AT in state ST, and then AT minus 1 and ST minus 1, blah, 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 all the way to the end, the beginning of your life, is just the same as probability that you will be state ST1 given AT and ST. Again, how many of you have background in Bayes networks, conditional independence assertions? These are conditional independence assertions. Okay, so this MDP, you know, a Markovian property is a particular kind of conditional independence assertion. You are saying that this huge ugly looking joint probability is really nothing but this probability is nothing but this probability. Okay, given AT and ST, ST plus 1 is independent of everybody else. That's the conditional independence assertion. Yes, there was a question. Yeah. No, no, this is just a conditional independence assertion. I'm just saying, so this is like saying probability A given B and C is the same as probability A given B. I'm telling you this. Okay? So in particular, you are saying probability A given B and C can be written as probability A, B, C by probability B, C, which is not one and the same as this. But I'm telling you that in your domain, probability A given B, C is the same as probability A given B. So it is putting structure into the probability distribution.
And so what I meant was, before the chain, which is 1 to 1.
No, there is no chain here. I'm just asking, what is the probability that I will be in state ST plus 1, given that in just the current state I did AT, and the state before that I did AT minus 1, and the state before that I did AT minus 2, etc. Okay, so all you are asking yourself is this: what's the probability that when I'm standing here and I drop this, it will fall on the table versus on the floor? Now, obviously, before I did this, I was outside the door, and then before that I was in my office, before that I was in my home, I did various actions to get here. All I am saying is the probability as to whether it will fall on the table or floor depends only on the fact that I am standing here and dropping it. Okay? It doesn't depend on how I got to this state. You see what I'm saying? Okay. Now, the other thing that's kind of less important, although that's also Markovian, is so when the MDP's dynamics don't have Markovian property, things become quite hairy. Okay. One interesting thing to understand again is if a system doesn't have, if a system is second order Markovian, you can convert it into a first order Markovian system at the expense of blowing up the state space. Do you see what I'm saying? A kth order Markovian system can be made into a first order Markovian system by essentially exponentiating the state space, k order. Okay, so it is possible to, you know, if your current world is not Markovian, you can make it Markovian by just changing the state representation. The way you increase the state space size is what? Remember I told you, although here we are talking about states as black boxes, there is this other view that also you can keep in mind. A state is a set of state variables, right? And the state variables, let's say if there are n state variables, there are 2 power n states. Now, with this n state variable, suppose the system is only second order Markovian, then I will go ahead and keep an extra state variable, n plus 1 state variable. And in this n plus 1 state variable system, you will be first order Markovian. And what you did is you just multiplied the state space size, which used to be 2 power n, by 2 power, it's become now 2 power n plus 1, which is 2 times 2 power n. Okay, so if it's not first order Markovian, you can convert it to first order Markovian by increasing the state space size. That means, you know, it becomes a harder problem. Because the number of states increase, it's going to be harder to solve it. Okay, the second thing is the reward process, in the way I said it, is also first order Markovian. Because I just said R of S. Okay. By the way, I mean, it's dark here and things have been going crazy. Can people actually think of a second order Markovian system? I mean, this obviously is first order Markovian system. What makes it into a second order Markovian system? I mean, I told you something in abstract. I'm kind of hoping that you knew what I'm talking about, but you know, unless you have an example, you have no clue. Yes, sir.
Adding a direction of robot spacing.
Then what happens?
Then you no longer think about just moving in one direction.
That's actually a very good point. So, in fact, adding a direction is one way. Another one, that's correct, by the way, but I'll give you another example. Suppose in between there are locked cells. And if the robot has the lock, has the key with it, then it can go through it. If not, it can't go through it. But the robot will or will not have a key depending on whether it actually picked the key up in the beginning. So if you are not tracking the state, I mean, if the state doesn't track the location of the key, okay, then the robot will be thinking, sometimes I seem to be able to cross through this, sometimes I'm not. And it seems to depend on the states I went through. There was a state where I happened to put the key in my back, you know, in a pocket, so I was able to get through. Imagine these are keys where the robot doesn't even have to do any action. It's like a smart, you know, smart card kind of a thing. When the smart card is in its pocket, when it comes to the door opens. When it's not in the pocket, when it comes to the door doesn't open. So sometimes it looks like it's, you know, the obstacle. So the dynamics of, when I try to go up, sometimes I just seem to stay in this cell. Other times I'm actually going into the other cell with 0.8 probability. Okay, now what happened is that my state representation did not keep track of the whether or not I have the smart card in my pocket. So I'll go ahead and throw that into the state representation. Then that will just double the state space size. Agreed?
But don't you think that can triple the state space?
Well, it depends on how many values, the valuations the state, that variable has. I'll assume that, you know, this is just a Boolean variable of do I have the smart card or don't I have the smart card. But this gives you a feel for what makes something non-Markovian. Okay, or non-Markovian means second order, a third order Markovian. Okay, and how you can compile it back into Markovian. You start, you know, keeping track of more variables. Yes?
To this point, adding a direction to the state, but you already have a direction to it by assigning the stochastic.
No. What he is saying is, this is like, you know, I'm teaching my son driving, so it comes very much in handy. Okay, you can go forward or backward, and it also depends on, you know, the forward and backward are different from the direction in which the car is facing. Okay, so if you are trying to go up, in some sense what I'm saying is north direction. If the robot is trying to do the north direction, but if it is facing the south direction, the dynamics would likely be different, because it has to kind of pull itself, because there would be a tension, you know, these things are likely to go the other side. But that's a good example, so is the lock example. Now think of the lock example and tell me, can you think of a non-Markovian reward function? A reward function basically says, you get this reward just because you got to this state. Exactly. So again, so if you keep track of your state with all possible variables, then you will be Markovian, both in dynamics and reward. Okay. What happens is typically, like, I mean, this is basically not Markovian. So the reward function basically is saying, I'm in the same state, and how come I'm sometimes getting reward of 10 units, sometimes getting reward of 3 units? Well, sometimes you had the magic coupon in your hand, and the other times you don't have the coupon. Now you say, well, why don't you then track the coupon, whether or not I have the coupon? Yeah, you can. I'll just increase the state space size. Okay? One thing as an AI person you want to think about is, it is important to keep the state space size small. Because one can always say, here is a way of, saying that everything can be made Markovian. Basically, if there are, let's say, you know, some 3 billion state variables of interest at all for any problem. So whatever your problem, you throw in all 3 billion state variables in the state. That way you can't go wrong. Of course, in real world, actually, there are infinite number of state variables. But, you know, let's assume there's only 3 billion state variables. If you're doing, you know, like navigation, maybe you only need to, you'll try to just use 10 of them. If you're doing eating, maybe you'll try to use another 15 of them. But there are connections in the state variables. Okay? So you could say, well, I'll just throw in all the state variables for all the problems. That way I could be sure that will be Markovian. But then you die. You'll never solve any problem. You see what I'm saying? Theoretically, you can back, you know, pat yourself on the back saying I'm Markovian, but then you have such a big state space that you die. Okay, that's the reason why people care about, you know, what's the least number of state variables that I can put in such that it'll still be Markovian for this problem. Okay? And so this is a Markovian for the dynamics, this is Markovian for the reward function. No. I'm okay. Look, in these slides, so I'm sort of combining two things. Okay, because it's a graduate class. If it's not, even if it's an undergraduate class, I would just go through line by line. You know, I'll just say can be generalized to include action cars, and I'll stop there. And then you can, you know, write it down. And you feel good, I feel good. Okay. But what I'm saying is, for every one of those things, not only am I saying this, I'm also saying how can you get rid of this constraint? Because you are adventurous. You are grad students. Right? So if there is a, you know, constraint, you want to know, you know, what do I need to do to get rid of this? And then if I tell you it's a huge cost, then you'll say, okay, I'll live with the constraint. If it's a small cost, I'll get rid of it. That's what I'm trying to do here. Okay, having done all this, next slide onwards, I'll just be talking about simple Markovian, as given, simple Markovian state spaces. But when you are an agent, you take a world, you model the world. And this is where I said you have 2 billion state variables you can track, and you chose to just track 10 variables. Why? Because computationally you probably don't want to track too many more. But when you do that, you can take a hit in terms of Markovian. Okay? So in specifications, you know, somebody gave the specification of the problem. But I'm just telling you that these problems don't come out of nowhere. You know, people actually formulate these problems. But the agent formulate them themselves. Okay? Faster, Mark Henry, of course. The other one is stationary dynamics and reward, which essentially says if you are in this state in epoch 1 versus epoch 15 versus epoch 19, you get the same exact reward. Okay, the reward doesn't get, I mean, it's not like the state has 15 tokens of reward and the first 15 times they'll give it and after that they lose the reward. It's not that. It's always the same reward. And that is easy enough to understand for the rewards. And the other thing, of course, is dynamics. Okay, dynamics also are supposed to be stationary. In this, you know, the way I wrote it, the dynamics are stationary. What that means is that the probability that you will be in state S in the T plus 1th epoch, given that you did action A in state S in the T-th epoch, would be the same as that you would be in a particular state in the K plus 1th epoch, K being different from T, given that you were in doing A in S in the K-th epoch. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. It's always, you know, when you try to go up, whether you try to go up the, you know, when you started or when you did large number of actions, the translation function remains the same. Once again, it's not necessary that the dynamics have to be stationary. It's not necessary that the reward function has to be stationary. If you're stuck with non-stationary reward and dynamics, then you can compile it down oftentimes into stationary reward and dynamics with the same kind of a trick.
Can you give an example for that?
Basically, in the morning, I'll give you a reward. If you come to me in the afternoon, I won't give you any reward. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay? So basically, if you come to my room in the morning, actually, in fact, Halloween is coming. Okay? If you come to somebody's home on Halloween evening, they'll give you a candy. If you go into their home after 12:30 midnight, you would be put in jail. Different reward. Right? So non-stationary reward. Okay? How do I make sure that the reward is non-stationary in that case? You throw in extra state variable. You keep track of the absolute clock time. Remember, absolute clock time is different from the epoch. Do you guys see this? I mean, you could have been the laziest person. You woke up from bed at 11:30 p.m. and dressed up in your Halloween costume and started going and knocking on people's doors. So this is the first house I came. How come you're calling the police? Well, I'm calling police because it's already midnight and you should not be knocking on my doors at this point. So you track an extra state variable. That will increase the size of the space. That will increase, then it will make it again stationary. Got it? Okay. Again, I think it's important that I could have just gone through this, but as grad students, you want to know what are each of those saying, and any assumption, if it's called an assumption, it's because real world doesn't behave that way. You see what I'm saying? You know, like for example, nobody says, I'll assume that my students in the class are actually alive, because all classes people are alive, you know, I mean, mostly. I think pretty much 99.9999%. So it's not an assumption. Saying I'm assuming that my students are awake is a huge assumption. Even as I see, people are falling apart. You know, they're sleeping sometimes, they're waking up sometimes. You know, that's an assumption. Okay. So any of these assumptions, they are not true for the real world. You make it to make your life simple. And so you want to know what happens if the, you know, assumption doesn't work. Okay, and then the last assumption is full observability. The MDP knows the state it is in. This is important. The first time you think of MDPs, you may get confused because there is stochasticity in the actions. When you do the action, multiple things can happen. So in simulation, you don't know which particular state will happen. But in real world, you'll know which state happened. You see what I'm saying? Before you do the action, you don't know which of the cells you will get into, but after the action, you know exactly which cell you got into. The poor PalmDP doesn't know even afterwards. That's lack of observation. Okay? Fine. So that's the those are the assumptions we have on this particular, that are already built in to this particular, MDP model. Okay? So now, what is the solution for an MDP model? A solution is a policy. We talked about this last time, and all the policy does is it basically tells you what action you are supposed to do given the state you are in. Okay, it cannot be a line plan because normal deterministic actions, deterministic agents can come up with a sequence of states, sequence of actions. Because in a deterministic world, you actually don't need eyes. You only need eyes in the beginning of the world, the beginning of your execution. Once you look at the world and then you close your eyes, then you can just do the actions you're supposed to do. Right? Because everything is supposed to happen exactly according to the plan.
But that's the static environment.
Yes, deterministic and static. But this is also static. Right? Okay. So what we are saying is that in deterministic environments, you can have actually a sequential plan, but in a stochastic environment, it doesn't make sense to talk about sequential plans. You may, after doing an action, you may be in several states. After doing a bunch of actions, you may be in several states. And so what you need to do is when you wake up, when after this action you actually open your eyes, you know which state you are exactly in. And then you need to know what action to do from there. So that's why last class we looked at these as the policies. So it doesn't matter to me. If you find yourself here, you're supposed to go up. If you find yourself here, you're supposed to go right. That's what the policy is supposed to tell. Okay? So a solution, a candidate solution for an MDP is a policy. Now the interesting question is, there is still additional structure in the policy that we need to talk about. One is called non-stationary policy, one is called stationary policy. A non-stationary policy asks you not only what state are you in, but also how many epochs are left before you die. Do you understand what I'm saying? If this is the last action you get to do, then do this. If you still have 15 more actions left to do, then your optimal action is a different one. That's what a non-stationary policy says. Okay? A stationary policy, on the other hand, doesn't care about how long you have to live. Now, for a finite horizon MDP, which I already talked about, and that means an MDP where the agent only gets to live for k epochs, do you think that the optimal policy in general would be stationary or non-stationary? Do you see what you're saying? Okay, in fact, my way to remember this is that quote from Churchill. I mean, our life is full of advice which says, do this as your optimal action if you are a young person, do this as the optimal action if you are an old person. The one I like is this, it says, if you are 20 and you're not a liberal, you're heartless, and if you're 40 and not a conservative, you're mindless, according to Churchill, it's his opinion. Okay, and Ford, for example, said, below 30, invest in yourself. Presumably, above 60, invest in the government bonds. Okay, so financial decisions, also optimal financial decision depends on how much time you have left to live. You're not surprised. Now, here is the interesting thing. The optimal policy is non-stationary. But is the underlying MDP stationary or non-stationary? I mean, is my answer here about optimal policies for finite horizon MDPs being non-stationary, does it care about whether the MDP underlying is stationary or non-stationary? Which is the easy case? Stationary. This will still be non-stationary even though the MDP is stationary. Do you understand what I'm saying? Right? I mean, so even though we want MDPs to be stationary because it's hard otherwise, but even well-behaved stationary MDPs will, of necessity, have non-stationary policies. What that means is What that means is that the policy now has to say, remember a while back, I think a couple of classes back, I said, how many policies are there? I tried to compute the number of policies, right? And to do the number of policies, I said, well, there are S number of states, there are A number of actions. So in the first state, you can do any of the A actions. The second state, you can do any of the A actions, blah, 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 blah. Right? And that will make it that's the number of policies. That's an ugly looking number if I saw one. But that's nothing compared to if you live only a finite amount of time. I mean, it's interesting actually. Think about this. If you don't live infinite amount of time, then you better be, then optimization problem is harder. That's what we are saying in essence, because there are many more policies if you live finite amount of time. Okay, by the way, in saying that, actually, I skipped one other piece, plus point, one other point, which is, if you live for infinite amount of time, would your optimal policy be stationary or non-stationary? Why? No, I only said infinite amount of time. You know, you will just live for infinite amount of time. So will your optimal policy have to be stationary or non-stationary? This is just a math question. It has to be stationary. Because if you're going to live for infinite amount of time, and I already lived 3 days, how much time do I have still left to go? Infinite. 5 to 15 days later, still infinite. 29 days later, still infinite. So there is no difference. Because you only talk about how much time you have left to go. And so you always have infinite amount of time. Which means there is no point in talking about non-stationary policy. It's always a stationary policy. So if you live infinite amount of time, then the number of policies you need to distinguish between is this. If on the other hand, you live only T number of epochs, then you would have to say, A power S times T. What did I do? What exactly did I do? Anyway. Well, you should remember this point because the class itself became quite anyway. Okay. Now of course you must thank goodness that when T is infinity, you don't need to put T there, right? Because then you'll be in big trouble. Okay, if you live infinite amount of time, you have an easier problem. If you have finite amount of time, you have a harder problem. Okay, but again, I'll change it in a minute. You know, but because actually, for finite case, today we'll know, hopefully today we'll know how to compute the policy. Okay, so that's a stationary, that's a non-stationary policy. One other thing actually that's interesting is, should the policy be deterministic or or stochastic? Would the optimal policy, okay, here is the interesting thing. Even if you have a finite horizon MDP, you the agent can come up with a stationary policy and say, to heck with it, this is my policy, this is what I'm going to do. All I'm saying here is, in such a case, there would be situations where the best policy you came up with will not be the optimal one. Because sometimes the optimal one has to be non-stationary. And since you are only searching in the space of stationary policies, you would be wrong at least sometimes. That's all I'm saying. Right? I mean, you know, I've got lots of people actually just, you know, my financial philosophy is if you have money, put it under a pillow and sleep on it. And it's been the same. And I can choose that way, and it's, you know, inoptimal, but that's my philosophy. I don't want to waste my time thinking about what to do with the money. Do you see what I'm saying? So an agent can always come up with stationary policy even when that's not optimal. So now, in both these cases, the agent came up with a deterministic policy because I said, given the state, what's the action? Or given the state and the number of epochs left, what is the action? Well, we're talking about stochastic dynamics. Shouldn't the choice also be stochastic?
No, the action is always one. You can have a probability that you will be in this state,
I understand, but my question is, should I not have my agent look for stochastic policies, which says when you are in state S1 with probability 0.7, pick action A1 and probability point. I mean, suppose it's a very simple MDP, two actions A1 and A2. Okay, and two states S1 and S2. Right? Then basically there are only, you know, four policies. You know, assuming it's infinite horizon one. Okay, but now I can also say, well, if I want to consider stochastic policies. To do the stochastic policies, I'll say when I'm in state S1, I will pick action A1 with 0.7 probability, A2 with 0.3 probability, and then in state S2 I'll pick A2 always. Let's say that's a policy. It's a stochastic policy because one of my decisions is stochastic. Actually, it involves tossing a coin. How many stochastic policies are there? Infinite. Right? Because instead of 0.7 and 0.3, I could have said 0.699999 and 0.299999. And I'll say 0.3130001. That'll be a different policy. There'll be infinite number of stochastic policies. When was the last time you ever thought of tossing a coin before doing an action? And this is a bad question to ask, because probably a lot of you just toss a coin anyway, in like especially exams, A, B, C, D, just toss a coin and figure out which one it is. But when is a time it's guaranteed that the right thing to do is tossing a coin? What? No, I'm giving you the probabilities. I'm telling you, when would you say, so basically here we are saying, somehow we made it look as if, because I didn't put it there in that slide, if you only focus on deterministic policies, you will still be optimal. So I'm saying that for this case, if you focus only on deterministic policies, you are optimal. But if you focus only on stationary policies, you won't be optimal if the horizon is finite. Right? So can you think of a time, or can you think of a scenario where your success actually depends on not having a deterministic policy?
If you're competing with other agents, then you want to be unpredictable.
How many of you have played rock, paper, scissors? Okay. So there was a old joke. I'll send it to you by the thing. So, you know, how many of you know Simpsons, Lisa and Bart, right? So there's this one cartoon where basically Lisa and Bart are trying to settle some score by, you know, playing rock, paper, and scissors. And so Bart basically convinces Lisa that they should do it this way because he likes rock, paper, and scissors. And then you have these two, is this a cartoon, right? So they have these two bubble things, dialogues. Lisa, the Bart bubble thing is saying, yay, we get to play rock, paper, scissors. And Lisa's thing is saying, yay, we get to play rock, paper, scissors, and Bart always picks rock. Did you understand? Okay? So if you are in multi-agent scenarios, optimal policies may not be deterministic policies. Okay? Here it turns out, for a single agent scenario, if there is an optimal policy, there will also be a deterministic optimal policy. If you come up with a mixed policy, in fact, the word for these policies, the ones which are stochastic, I call it stochastic, they're called mixed policies and mixed strategy. The word strategy is a game theoretic term. The word policy is a single agent term. But an agent always has a strategy or a policy, whichever you want to call it. It's basically they're the same terms. So agent's policy or strategy can be always deterministic if it basically doesn't have to deal with other agents. Okay? Whereas sometimes the optimal one has to be stochastic. So in game theoretic versions of MDP, when you have to throw in the other agents, then you actually have to search in the mixed policy space, which is much larger. Now, whatever I just said, there is a book on MDPs called Putterman's book on mass causation processes, Martin Putterman. It's a huge 900 page book. And each of these are theorems that are proved there. I'm basically kind of appealing to your intuition and providing counterexamples when, you know, I need to. Okay, but this is not a proof. You know, you need to actually ask, can I prove that if there is, I mean, can I prove for sure that I'll never have to deal with mixed policies? And the way the proof would go is assume there is a mixed policy that's optimal. Then I'll construct for you a deterministic policy that has the same value. So then you shut up. Right? Each one of these is a theorem, essentially. Yeah.
So even a single agent scenario, if we allow T to vary, can we still say that optimal policies have to be stochastic?
T to vary meaning indefinite?
No, it can say instead of looking at T is equal to 2 and looking at T is equal to 5.
No. So the question is, does the agent know how many epochs it's going to live? Okay, if it knows, then it's finite. I mean, if it knows and it's a finite number, it's finite. If it knows and it's infinite, it's an infinite horizon. If it doesn't know, but it knows that it will be finite, then it will be indefinite horizon, which we will come to later. And it turns out that it's a reasonably good question to worry about. It turns out, thankfully, that even for indefinite horizon problems, you can essentially focus on just deterministic policies. Okay. Okay, so that's your thing, and then of course all of them are assuming full observability because you know exactly the state you are in, history independence, that's why this Markovian, and deterministic action choice, that's what I spent a lot of time explaining to you. Okay, so if you go back and see, we just went through 3 slides, you know, please remember that there's a lot that was, you know, provided behind each of these. Okay, so also we answered why not just consider sequences of actions. And I can also ask, well, if you don't like a sequence, why not just replan? What is the replanning? Here is an idea of dealing with MDPs. This MDP, okay? Look, for all practical purposes, when you go up, when you say up, you're going up. 0.8 up, 0.1 the 2 sides. So to heck with the other 2 outcomes. I'll act as if the action going up will always go to the shell above. So I just converted an MDP with stochastic dynamics into an MDP with deterministic dynamics. At which point I can come up with a sequential plan, which is basically finding a path from the start state to the goal state. And then I'll start executing it. And then after I execute, if I knew for sure that my world was deterministic, after I came up with the plan, I could just close my eyes and execute it. I would be correct. And then after all my actions are over, I just say mission accomplished. Okay? Because you don't need to look at the real world anymore. Okay? Put a big banner and say you're done. Okay. Now, however, if I have already, I'm aware of the fact that I relaxed the stochastic dynamics into deterministic dynamics just to make my life simple, then I should know that, yeah, you know, sometimes things can go wrong. So rather than just do all the 8 actions and say, I'm done, do one action, see if you are in the state you are expected to be in. If so, do the second action, and so on. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay? If you do that, then you are monitoring your plan. You're monitoring your plan. You monitor a plan only because you don't really, really believe that the world is deterministic and static. If you do, you're wasting your time monitoring it. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. Now, as you're monitoring it, right, the thing is then, after you do action A1, you are supposed to be in S1. Oops, you're not in S1. Remember, it's still fully observable. So you may not know, you are hoping that you will get into S1, but when you when you looked around, you know that you're not in S1. You are in S2. Okay. That could be good luck for you. Because if in fact your plan was in S0 do A1, you will get into S1, then do A2, you will get into S2, then you do A3, you get into S3. Okay? And you do action A1, and you suddenly are in S15, that means, yes, the world is not behaving the way it's supposed to behave, but it's way more benign. People are trying to get you ahead. Okay, you showed one action, somebody lifted you and put in the right direction, right place. Okay, it's important to know where you are, because even if people are helping you in this way, I mean, there are like where all sorts of religious posters saying supposedly various gods do this kind of thing for you. My only point is, even if your God is doing this for you, you need to monitor. If you don't monitor, you would be in S75 and you still think you're an S1 and you're doing these actions which are supposed to be for S1, and that might actually undo the progress. You see what I'm saying? Okay, so you monitor and sometimes you might luck out, and then most often times you don't luck out, you actually go to a state, because the reason it's a good state is you luck out when, even though you are expected to go to S1, you didn't go to S1, you went to S15, but you know what to do in S15, because your plan tells you what to do in S15. Okay, I mean, this seems... A sequential plan looks like this. I started with S0, action A1, I'll probably get S1, A2, S2, A3, S3, A4, S4, A5, S5, mission accomplished. That's my goal state. This is what a sequential plan tells you. And if you don't need to monitor, you just do A1, A2, A3, A4, A5 without looking. If you need to monitor, you do A1, check your state. If you are in one of these five states, you know what to do. If you're not in one of these five states, you're in big, bad trouble. Okay, so the kind of lucky things that can happen, even though the world is not deterministic and static, the kind of lucky things that can happen to the agent is it does A1, and instead of finding itself in S1, it finds itself in S4. That's good. It only has one more action left to do. Do you see that? Okay. And similarly, instead of after A1, instead of being in S1, it's actually in S5. You can right away say mission accomplished. So like you came up with a war plan which involves 18 runs of bombing. After the first bombing, people are actually putting huge white sheets and saying, we give up. Normally, you're supposed to stop them. Unless you want to try how the other bombs work. And the world actually has examples of that too. You know, we sometimes tried whether the bombs work or not. Okay, because that's another point about plans. But in this particular case, if you all you wanted to do is to get to the goal state, if you reach the goal state, you stop. That's a good thing. Another thing which is not as lucky but can still happen and you still will be reasonably happy is you are in S3, you did A4, you find yourself in S1. Still okay. Because I know what to do in S1. Right? Things that can be bad is you are in S3, you do A4, you get into S15. And you don't know what to do in S15. And it could be that, so in that case, then basically what do? This is, at that point you do what's called replanning. In fact, all of what we are doing is, until now what we did was, a sequential plan is a partial policy. A sequential plan is a partial policy which tells you what to do in a subset of states of the world. If you are in one of those states, you know what to do. You're done. Okay, if you ever fall out of those states, what do? You find a place to get back to. You know, if you ever get off the highway, then you find a way of getting back on the highway. Then you follow the rest of the plan. As you do this, what is happening? Your plan is slowly becoming a bigger and bigger partial policy. Asymptotically, it can become the full policy. That's what is meant by this thing. Why not just replan? You guys do this. You live your life like this. When there are stochastic outcomes, you have to heck with all the stochastic outcomes. Who has the time to figure out all the possible, nuances? I'll just assume things will work out for me. And unless you are like complete bozos, When they don't work out, you realize they didn't work out and you try to find another plan to still make it work. You won't say mission accomplished. You are replanning. So my question is your life a reasonable life? Can we avoid just doing, you know, can we avoid doing this crazy optimal policy construction and just do replanning? Well, the problem is when you got into S15, that could have been a minus 10,000 unit reward. You see what I'm saying? That's a state that you didn't expect to get into. You got into it. If you still survive, yes, you can then make another plan to get back onto the highway. If you don't survive, or if you got a hugely negative reward, or furthermore, in fact, even more than huge negative reward, the real issue in that, you know, in these kinds of things is, what if it is a terminal state? That means you go to that state, you don't get to take any more actions. It's like death. Then people could have avoided death by planning ahead. You didn't avoid death because you tried to tempt fate by doing replanning. Now, do we think that our little kids, I don't know about you, but do we think that our little kids actually find optimal plans in the kitchen? No. Once in a while, they're just doing random actions, and once in a while, they'll get really badly burnt. What do? We avoid putting live guns, hot stuff, big fire in the living room. You know, it's not as obvious as it sounds as you keep reading news. Okay? We stabilize the environment. When you stabilize the environment, what happens is there cannot be any sink state. In fact, I'll give you as the last term a very big sounding term called ergodicity. What's ergodicity? Ergodicity, you'll say a world is ergodic if there is non-zero probability of reaching any state from any other state. Okay, it's okay for kids to kind of get burnt, but they shouldn't get killed, because then after that they can't do any action. Okay, so when you stabilize your living room such that there are no sink states, then you made your living room ergodic. Is the world as a whole ergodic? No. Are national parks ergodic? Ask people who do some silly thing and then get swept over by the falls, for example. Looks all nice and then suddenly it's not ergodic. You are in the bottom of the falls, you don't have any actions to do. There you need an optimal policy to begin with, at least to avoid getting into the really bad state. In an ergodic world, replanning will not be optimal still, but it at least be satisficing. This is another word. It's not a particularly formal word. In fact, Herb Simon, essentially, he's the only computer scientist to have gotten a Nobel Prize. Yes, must you spoil the fun, but you know, he's still the computer scientist, right? So he got Nobel Prize for economics. And what economics did he do? He essentially said that the Wisconsin Milwaukee Municipal Corporation, he followed their decision making and said their decision making is far from optimal and it's satisficing. Now it's kind of, you know, I guess you'd say that I knew this all along, that's how I live my life. But he said even people who are paid big bucks to do decisions on our behalf are doing satisficing decision making. I mean, they're just trying barely to avoid bankrupting the entire corporation, but they are not by any means optimal. Okay, to even have a satisficing life, you need a world that is ergodic. And if you have an ergodic world, you don't need to know anything about how to compute optimal policies. You can compute, you know, you can do all sorts of approximations. In fact, why even have a plan? You know, here I acted as if I have a plan, right? A sequential plan. Why not just try an action and do what happens? Just do it. So S0, I feel like doing A7. And I'll do A7 and I see if I'm already in the goal state. If I'm in the goal state, yay, I'm done. If not, I'll see what state I'm in and do A19 from there, let's say. This is reactive living, reactive planning. That means not planning at all. That's not going to be optimal, but if the world is ergodic, that will at least get you to the goal state, you know, asymptotically. I think we have to stop here. Okay.